Hello, everyone. This is Sarah Douglas. I played the Kryptonian villain Ursa in the Superman films, and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hey there, super fans. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I am your host, Joe Stuber. Once again, coming to you from the lair with another incredible talent who makes our favorite four-color adventures come alive. Last time we got together, you heard from Superman's pal from DC Comics, Mike Carlin. I'm keeping things super this week from my absolute favorite comic book movie of all time. One of the best movies of all time, period. Superman the movie. And the spectacular sequel, Superman 2, actress Sarah Douglas will be stopping by in just a few minutes. I assure you, I will not be asking her to arm wrestle. We all know what happens when you do that. Only bad things can happen. So looking forward to that. Before we get to that interview, however, I've got a few things to mention. As you know, took a little break from the show for a few weeks, but I was certainly not resting. First off, I did what most of the planet did. I saw Star Wars The Force Awakens. Saw it several times, in fact. No spoilers, don't worry, you don't have to push pause. I will say, though, it is an incredible film. J.J. Abrams and company, they brought that world that we all know and love, they brought it back to us. Could watch this thing over and over again. I really, really thoroughly enjoyed it. It is Jar Jar free, which is awesome. And the Millennium Falcon flies again. It was so incredible to see that. If you haven't seen it, look, if you're listening to this podcast, you have more than likely seen it. But if you haven't, what are you waiting for? Go watch it. May the Force be with you. And stay tuned to Comic Book Central in the months ahead. That is all I'm going to say about that. Lucasfilm, that means Star Wars. It also means Indiana Jones. My wife, Kelly, and I, we had a blast meeting up with my podcasting partner and IndieCast buddy, Keith Voss. He and his lovely wife, Kay, they were in visiting from Austria. So we got a chance to meet up in the nation's capital for the National Geographic exhibit, Indiana Jones and the Adventure of Archaeology. Loved every second of that. Some incredible displays. My goodness, the Ark of the Covenant was there. Everything that they had. Costumes, props, all kinds of cool stuff. You will hear all about our adventure on an upcoming episode of the IndieCast. That is at theindiecast.com. You can also subscribe in iTunes. Be sure to stay tuned to that podcast. And be sure to check out our Facebook page for our segment on the IndieCast. The Further Adventures of Indiana Jones. We're going to be posting a bunch of pictures over there. Also on the IndieCast Flickr page. They'll be out there in the weeks ahead. So I think you're really going to enjoy that. And of course, talk about bringing comic books to life. Marvel Universe Live, what a show. If you've liked the Comic Book Central Facebook page, it's facebook.com/Comic Book Central Network. If you have been over there, then you know I caught the show during its stop here in Ohio. Man, this thing was amazing. More than 24 Marvel characters brought to life. Yes, they even got the big green guy in there. That was pretty spectacular. The show's director, Shonda Sawyer, I interviewed her way back on episode 33. Yes, I have been waiting that long for the show to come to Columbus. You can hear all about the show on that episode. Next week, I'll not only give you my review of the show, it's a glowing one, I will say that, as you can figure out, but you're also going to hear a wee bit of what went on behind the scenes in bringing the show to Columbus, so you're going to want to check that out. If you are listening to this episode of Comic Book Central Saturday, January 2nd, and you are in my old stomping grounds, Memphis, Tennessee, you've got today and you've got tomorrow to catch the show before it moves on to St. Louis, so I highly recommend it. And then it's going to move on to some other cities after that. Check out MarvelUniverseLive.com for all the show info. Again, be sure to check out my wrap-up next week on Comic Book Central. The Comic Book Central Facebook page as well. I'm going to be posting my pictures from the show over there. So if you haven't liked the page, you're going to want to go do that ASAP. All right, on to today's show. Always a thrill for me to talk about the Christopher Reeve Superman films. They made us believe a man can fly. They also made us believe that three Kryptonian villains can really give the Man of Steel a hard time. One third of that terrifying trio is here today. Take a listen to this, and I'm going to be right back to talk with the villainous, vivacious, very beautiful, and very talented Sarah Douglas. Born in the same town as William Shakespeare, Stratford-upon-Avon, you could say Sarah Douglas was immersed in a theatrical atmosphere right from the start. Quite early on, she attended the prestigious Rose Bruford Training School and worked with the National Youth Theater, where she developed those considerable acting skills. Before long, she was featured in numerous television roles in Britain, including one of our favorites, Space 1999. And in 1977, she landed the co-starring role in the film adaptation of Edgar Rice Burroughs' The People That Time Forgot. The following year, Sarah became part of superhero history as the Kryptonian villain Ursa. In the unforgettable opening moments of Superman the movie, Sarah and her fellow nefarious ne'er-do-wells, Jack O'Halloran's Non and Terrence Stamp's General Zod, they're banished to the Phantom Zone by Jor-El, played by Hollywood legend Marlon Brando. Now, while her time in the first film is just limited to a few minutes, Sarah knew the bigger and better things were just ahead in the sequel. To cut costs, Superman and Superman 2 were shot simultaneously, and in the super sequel, Ursa, Zod, and Non were coming back to wreak havoc on Earth. And unfortunately, havoc was being wreaked behind the scenes. Filming on Part 2 was put on hold. The original director, Richard Donner, he was given the boot. Director Richard Lester was brought in to reshoot most of the sequel. In spite of all the turmoil, Superman 2 was a smashing success. And Sarah's icy, menacing performance mesmerized audiences worldwide, opening the door for roles in a slew of sci-fi, fantasy, action-adventure films and television series, including Conan the Destroyer, Return of Swamp Thing, V, The Final Battle, Stargate SG-1, and Babylon 5. But genre roles are only a part of what makes Sarah so special. Her many TV roles include appearances alongside classic TV detectives Remington Steele and Thomas Magnum, and she heated things up for 2 seasons on the nighttime soap Falcon Crest. Today, we fanboys and fangirls can still get an Ursa-sized kick out of hearing Sarah's voice in some of our favorite animated series like Iron Man, Batman Beyond, Green Lantern, and yes, her return to the world of Superman as the Kryptonian villain, Mala. And joining me now is an incredible actress who has appeared in many of our favorite projects. She shared the screen with Conan the Barbarian, Swamp Thing, and she smacked Superman around in both live action and animation. She is Sarah Douglas. Sarah, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Well, thank you, Joe, and thank you so much for inviting me on. I'm delighted that you've got this terrific following of all my favorite films as well.
Oh, it's fun.
You know, I'm not a great sci-fi buff, but I do love a little bit of the fantasy comedy stuff. So the films that you've mentioned, I think certainly Return of the Swamp Thing. I think we really had quite a bit of comedic fantasy in there, if you don't mind me saying.
To say the least, I compare. I mean, it's almost camp. I mean, at some point,
it's always camp with me, dear. I mean, really, really. Let me tell you, Joe. It was a little learning curve for me. I'm not exactly sure. You can probably tell me when we shot that. I'm guessing it's in the 80s sometime. But
89 released, so you're probably shooting it maybe 88.
There you are. Well, there was a big strike on. I don't recall whether it was our actors union SAG or whether it was a writer strike, but I know that there was a strike on, of course, in LA where I lived. And I returned to England during that time because there was very little work going on. And my family live in Stratford-upon-Avon, which is, of course, William Shakespeare's home, and
you have acting in your blood there, don't you?
Yeah, really. We're all a bit sort of up ourselves here and a bit classically trained and stuff. However, I was sitting in the local pub, which is called the Dirty Duck, which is opposite the theatre, having an orange juice, of course, and there was a young actor in there, and he said to me, what are you reading? And I said, oh, I'm reading this script called something about a swamp thing. I said, I've just... I've just I've just been scented, and I said, you know what? I'm not at all sure I want to return, because I was having a nice little break there. Yeah. I'm not at all sure if I want to do a film that's called Return of the Swamp Thing. And he said to me, do you know how many of us at Stratford Theatre stand there every night, day in, day out, holding our spear with perhaps a word or a line, and that's it, longing for a producer to come along and say, would you care to come and star in Return of the Swamp Thing? And I thought, you know what, Douglas? He's absolutely right. Who am I to say I don't know? So it was one of those decisions I made that I was absolutely delighted about, because I had so much fun. Heather Locklear is a blast, of course. I mean, that was just, it was just a match made in heaven. And once I had established that it was Louis Jourdain who I was working with and not Charles Jourdain, who is a shoemaker, a very famous shoemaker from Paris, I was even more excited. And of course, he was absolutely such a charmer. Oh my goodness me. And then I discovered that I didn't have to actually be in the swamp where everybody else did. So I got the good deal. You know,
yeah,
I was on set because those guys were bitten to death. They have some big, mean mosquitoes there.
Oh, Adrian Barbeau told us some horror stories about filming the first one. So
that's right. Yes. Well, I don't think it got much better for the second one. But Jim Winoski, I have a soft spot in my heart for him, and I don't know why. I haven't seen him since those days, but I can remember we used to give him quite a runaround and quite a tough time, but he handled us all well. Heather Locklear was dating some guy from a punk band or something. I'm probably completely wrong. Some big pop star.
Yeah, was it from Motley Crue?
There you go, from Motley. That was it. So the whole hotel, when he came to visit, was surrounded by sort of guys and, well, mainly guys and sort of long going crazy. And it was just a period of it was the late 80s. We still knew how to have a lot of fun in those days. And boy, did we have a blast on Return of the Swamp Thing. I loved it.
I'm guessing a couple of the projects we're going to talk about you had a blast on. We'll talk a little bit about The Governator here as well. You mentioned, we talked about some of these things, and you mentioned off mic too, you know, just about these sci-fi genre projects. We talked about Superman, V, Conan, Swamp Thing, Babylon 5, Stargate. So you're not particularly fond of science fiction genre films, but you tend to gravitate toward them. What do you think it is about you, your performance, how your look, everything that just tells producers and directors, we've got to have Sarah Douglas?
Firstly, the very first job I ever had, just coincidentally, the very first job ever in my life, the first day I walked on a set, I hadn't, you know, it was the first job, was a film called, now we called it The Final Program in England. And it was a Michael Moorcock. So it was called The Last, it was called something else in America.
Was it Last Days of Man on Earth?
Thank you very much. The Last Days, that's it. It was a different title. So that was my very first film. And then very shortly after that, I did one of my first TV jobs. This was all in my very, very early, I was about 20, 21, which was Space 1999. So before I knew it, I seemed to be going in that sort of slight direction. But I have to say, I always played the nice girl who was just a little bit naughty on the side. And then Superman came along. And once I had done Superman and proved that I could be absolutely foul and obnoxious and evil and wicked and all the rest of it, I slotted very nicely into a category. And we know how Hollywood loves to put people in little boxes. I tried very hard not to go down that path. And for about a couple of years after Superman, I'd finished shooting it, we were turning down lots and lots and lots of work. And I was still, in those days, I was still in England. I hadn't yet moved to LA.
You turned down Conan too, didn't you, initially?
No. I don't know where that story came from. I ran in there with arms open. Oh,
okay.
Yes, I wasn't going to miss that.
I've read in several places where it was like, because just what you mentioned, you were trying to get away from that sort of role, but...
I'll tell you what possibly the reason for that maybe, and I'm not sure about this, was that I was already shooting Falcon Crest. on the nighttime soap Falcon Crest. So I was not under contract to them in those days. I was every week they would ask me to do the following week another episode, but it was proving to be it was going to be quite a challenge for me to fit in Conan shooting in Mexico and also Falcon Crest shooting in Burbank. Mm. But we managed it, and I went back and forth up and down on a plane, quite. But I think that once, so as I said, I turned down for a couple of years, and then I got out to, I went out to America in 83, I think it was 83, and I went for 3 months. And in that period, people had no idea who I was because, of course, back then, and this is something I think about quite often now because, my goodness me, social media really, it shoots people into everybody's consciousness so quickly. Whereas back then, Ursa was certainly on everybody's mind, but the person underneath Ursa, which was me, because I was wearing my short cropped wig and I had long hair and I was terribly English and terribly keen and I'm very fidgety, and Ursa was so far removed from the person that I am in terms of stillness and the whole persona. I arrived in the States and nobody had a clue who I was, which was fine. But I mean, they really didn't. Once people said she's a girl from Superman, we were on running. But and it's still like that now. But back then it was quite different. And I went on to Falcon Crest. And of course, the first thing that the publicity in Falcon Crest and my publicist in America, and the reason I mentioned publicist in America is I didn't have my own publicist when I was promoting Superman. So for the 2 years after Superman, in which I was, you know, flogging the film and going around the world and everything, I didn't have anybody telling me or teaching me or showing me how to sell Sarah Douglas.
Kind of handling you and making sure it's going in the right direction.
Yeah, all I did, and I did it brilliantly, was sell Superman and sell Ursa and sell the character. And we have to remember that back then also they had a very tight lid on the fact that Richard Donner was no longer the director of Superman 2, that he'd even been on Superman 2.
I want to get into that because we'll get into that a little bit when we talk about Superman, because I know Jack O'Halloran, definitely Margot Kidder, they had a much different experience, I think, with it. So you hit upon a really cool point that I want to dig into.
Absolutely.
I'm kind of thinking that, look, I grew up, a lot of my listeners grew up on 70s films, 80s films. So we know who our influences are. You know, people from the Superman movies, people from the Spielberg, Raiders, Star Wars movies. Who were your influences when you were growing up? What kind of things did you gravitate toward as a child?
Well, I was very much brought up on all the great sort of classics. So I was, when I say classics, I mean, as far as movies go, I it was England. It was England. It was the 50s and it was the 60s. So it wasn't really, I was certainly aware of people. I was certainly aware of, for instance, Richard Lester as a director, but I was the big movies, you know. So whether it was Dr. Zhivago or Lawrence of Arabia, I absolutely idolized Julie Christie, for instance, people like that I saw. But, you know, I was living in a small town in the middle of England, and I went to the theatre and we went to the movies once every so often if there was something to be seen, which, you know, wasn't too often. I was not really, until I was into my teens, when I really started, for instance, Marlon Brando, people like that. I mean, that was why it was so enormous for me to actually be working with him. I mean, I just couldn't get over it. But, you know, I was of that era. I was very removed from the world, if you like. I mean, I just saw these things. And, you know, you said earlier on about the sci-fi thing. I must just quickly just say, I just have never really understood science fiction. So I do these jobs and I think I have no idea what I'm talking about. Something about black holes or something about, you know. So this afternoon, I hate to admit this, I had the TV on and they had Mary Poppins on and I was singing along, you know. I am so far removed from all of this sort of sci-fi type things.
one of our favorite films here in the Lair. We love it.
Oh, well, there you go then.
Absolutely. Look, I'm talking to Julie Newmar about Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. So, you know, look, I'm not a total nerd. My wife has trained me well in the musicals.
Well, congratulations to her then. I'm very impressed. But, you know, I just didn't – what I mean is that I sort of fell into it. I fell into it. As I said, after Superman, Falcon Crest came along, and they capitalized on there was a line in Variety that described me as a leather-clad dominatrix. I was wearing organza, and there were bits of plastic on the side of my costume. Don't want to disillusion people, but it was kind of, you know, and I had PVC boots on, but hey, it's okay.
It worked. It definitely worked. Well, you say you kind of fell in, but I'm not sure that that's, I mean, you talk about being a teen. In England. Tell me a little bit about the National Youth Theatre Competition you were in when you were 14. This is pretty amazing.
Well, the National Youth Theatre is still going, and it's a very big organisation and very well revered. But back then, it was really, really a top-notch thing. And I was in the year below Helen Mirren. That's where she sort of started. That's one of her first, I think it was Cleopatra, one of her first performances was in the National Youth Theatre. It's from all over England, and it's up to... I think it's up to 18. It's any age up to 18 from about something like that. And I knew there were auditions. I wanted to audition. My family agreed to let me. And my mum said, because it seems I was always going to act, that if you get in there, they were auditioning something like 3,500 girls. I can't remember how many they took now, but it was some very low number of it could have been 6 or it could have been 16. I can't remember, but it was a very low number of girls that they would take. And my family said, if you get in, we will support you and we'll be behind you. And I got in, and at 14 years old, I went up to London. And had to be there in the summer months, and I had time off school as well. And we put on plays in the West End. We also took them to Europe. So I was on tour. And when I say there was a grown-up looking after me, I think the grown-up that kept an eye on me was about 23. So he wasn't so grown-up, you know. Now I look back. I keep my poor mother shudders every time I come up with one of my many stories of my adventures in the National Youth Theatre. There's a wonderful, wonderful English actor who lives in the States, Alfred Molina. And Alfred and I were in the same...
From Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes, indeed. And Alfred and I shared an apartment with a bunch of others. I mean, I think there were like 10 or 15 of us crammed into a very small apartment in London. And I was 14, and nothing untoward happened. I mean, I hasten to add, we were all completely and utterly obsessed with the theatre, and everything revolved around that. And it was it's where I really learnt the craft. It's also where I learnt to be punctual and on time. And my goodness me, to this day, I'm 15 minutes early for everything, unless I've been run over by a bus. And I will telephone you to say I'm under a bus and I'm going to be late. That was National Youth Theatre. They really gave you such a fabulous grounding. Unfortunately, after the youth theatre, I went back to school, and I went back a month later. All the other kids had gone back, and they were all there in their bobby socks, you know, and their neat little hairdos and everything. And I'd just been on tour and been around Berlin and Amsterdam and goodness knows where. The second year of the youth theatre, I came back, and after a week back at school, I thought, this is just, you know, there was no way I could settle. I had already been out there. And it was at that stage, I then, I think at 18, I went off to drama school. I mean, I did everything the right way. I always did it the naughty way, but nobody ever caught me, which is what's so great, you know? I just had a blast.
Whole different time.
And
all of us nerds love the fact that you just gave us the first meeting of Dr. Octopus and Ursa.
Oh, my God.
I know that you're not the science fiction and that you may or may not know what that means, but not for me. He played Dr. Octopus, so...
I think I need to have somebody explain that to me.
Alfred Molina played Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man 2.
Thank you. That's who he was. Yes, Alfred Molina. Well, in fact...
So our nerd brains just exploded a little bit. So, yeah, forgive us while we collect our thoughts.
Well, that is great. And in fact, I was not so many moons ago, I was in a big Hollywood party, and Fred was there, and we were laughing about something, and somebody overheard the conversation. Fred, to think you were the first boy that I slept with. And of course this person went like this, and I said, no, we kept our socks on, because of course we did. We all piled in, you know, we piled in all innocence, Dear Fred was my sort of age group, and I think we all were in sleeping bags, and there was nothing untoward about it. But Hollywood being Hollywood, I thought, oh, any minute now the gossip columns will pick up on this bit. But there was, it was a completely innocent friendship, and he was just fabulous. Anyway, so there you are. Now you've got even more information.
Now we've got more information. Exactly. Okay, so let's talk about a couple of these genre projects before we talk Superman, you know, one of our favorites right here. We mentioned Conan the Destroyer, 1984, Queen Taramis.
Yep.
So are there deleted scenes out there with you and Arnold and Will Chamberlain? We talk about some of these double entendres that you like to throw around here. So
no, I, as far as, yes, I know which ones you're referring to. As far as Arnold went, I know that there was a quote unquote love scene, which was quite a sort of a heated love scene. And I've talked about the fact that I kept my crown on and he kept his sword on. It wasn't quite as bad as that, except it was. And it was supposedly quite, it looked all quite passionate. I think that a reason it probably looked as if we were moving around and having, that he'd got a lot of oil on his body and I was slipping around. I think that's probably but it was, again, you know, I do
kept his socks on, but he oiled up, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, he kept his sword on, and there's something about a hilt in there, but I think we'll pass on that.
Do you think it's because they were going for a PG rating on this one as opposed to the R for the first?
Yes, yes. Okay. I mean, again, it was relatively innocent, but back then ratings were. I mean, goodness knows, I discovered that on Falcon Crest. I had to keep my foot on the floor in Falcon Crest. You know, you can have one foot in bed and one on the floor, and then it made it all right, which has made it to me made it even worse. But hey,
yeah. Now anything goes.
Yeah, he was. We had the. Well, when I say we had the best time, it sounds like I have the best time on every film. I do. I so love doing what I do, but I love doing it with people that are fun. And Arnold was and still is a great guy to be around. I mean, he is just the way everybody describes him. I can still say with great affection that whenever I see him, he'll give me a big hug and he'll get a great big old squeeze of bits of me and tell me that I need to, you know, to shape up and exercise and do this and that.
Thank you for keeping it family friendly there.
Yeah, I am keeping it family friendly. Of course I am. But he was terrific. Yeah. And of course I made a friendship there that is a lifelong one with Grace Jones. And Grace and I are, you know, still very, very close. You know, she comes down to visit my mom. She's at every birthday celebration. You know, we are very close. And in fact, I just, I spoke to her about 2 weeks ago before she went back to Jamaica. Grace and I, we met on the set. I had met her before briefly, but I think it was under a table in Studio 54 in the late 70s. So we don't really remember it too well. However, I met her on the set. She was having a photo shoot on we were down in Mexico City back then, and I went in to be introduced, and we just hit it off, and we have continued to cause and wreak havoc wherever we've been and whatever we've done and wherever we go, which is brilliant. She's a very, very good friend.
The film is just so unbelievable. It's just like all these characters, and they're just so bold, and it just. It's amazing the actors that you got in. I mean, you talk about Grace Jones. It's not a subtle film on any level.
Wilt Chamberlain as well was he had quite a reputation too.
Yes, he did. He probably rivals Arnold's.
Yes, I think so. Not that. Yes, indeed. I remember him very fondly.
We'll leave that there.
I think so. I think that's best. She said, "I'm squirming in my seat here."
But no, we'll leave that there. We'll leave that there. Some stories are best left untold.
It was a great film. It was great fun, and oh my costumes! Gosh, I love them.
Yeah.
I had the best costumes. There is a picture that when I go to these conventions, I've got a particular picture of me with the most magnificent costume on, which has got a big eagle on the front of me. And I am wearing nothing basically underneath. And the eagle is spread eagled over my chest, and the head of the eagle is placed very delicately on one side of me. And I'm leaving a lot of this to the imagination, but the gentleman The gentleman that designed the dress, of course, designed it beautifully. It was absolutely superb. And it's the eagle is obviously on a sort of netting that you can't see. It's very clever. But he obviously designed it without thinking about the problems of what happens when a lady moves around, because he was just thinking in terms of perhaps a
aesthetics.
Yeah. And so when I moved, my eagle moved as well. And it caused the head of the eagle with an open beak. That's all I'm going to leave you with. But it caused untold problems. He kept having to reposition everything. That was the days when things, you know, didn't move. Everything was pert and wonderful. It's all different now. But hey, anyway.
I am so glad you're self-editing. I love that about you.
I know. I don't want to make it uncomfortable for people. But I mean,
these movies in a whole new light.
I was telling a gentleman who bought the picture for me not so long ago, and I told him the story, you know, as if I'd never told anybody else.
He's
looking at this eagle, and he's looking at this beautiful dress and me in it. And as he walked away, I could see him sort of moving, sort of bending the photo up and down, trying to get this eagle to move. And I thought, you sad sack. But hey, yeah, whatever floats your boat, honey.
Whatever works. Different strokes for different folks. Look, spoiler alert. I don't know what the time limit is on spoiler alerts for 30-year-old films. Your character dies.
Yeah.
In it. Have they talked about – well, at the time, I know they even talked about, look, if we do a Conan 3, we're bringing Sarah Douglas back. Is that true? They were going to hopefully bring you back for it?
No, I never heard that.
Okay. I've read that in a few places.
Yeah. No, what a shame. I loved it. I have been born again a few times. I guess I died on the Horn of Dagoth, which the only thing I really remember significant about that was that the horn was a plastic sort of thing that had to be, there was a long tube that went across the set. I remember that. And there was a guy in the corner who basically blew into the horn so that it ejected itself for me to fall onto. And at the same time, I had a little sort of dynamite. Well, it's not dynamite. What the hell is it? Then, you know, that blows up on my chest so that it blew.
Oh, just like those little blister packs, the blood packs.
The blood packs. The first time around, it all went very, very seriously wrong, and everything sort of imploded. But I can remember in this dramatic scene with the wind blowing and everything, and as I'm throwing myself on the Hall of Dagoth, seeing this man with his cheeks fully extended as he blew into the tube, and I can remember, God, you know, movie making's great, isn't it? I mean, this is a Horn of Dagoth. It's a bit of old plastic that some bloke in the corner's blowing up.
Pre-CGI.
Yeah.
Well, look, we know Arnold's doing another one. He's going back. Would you be up for a return trip to the Hyborian Age?
I am so up for it. Listen, I am the queen of the return ofs, it seems. Return ofs, whatever. I'm basically the return queen. So I'm happy to be anybody's return queen. Yes, because you see, when it would be much easier to be an older, wicked old queen, wouldn't it? It would be much easier to do that than I could never return as Ursa, other than Ursa's mother or granny, but I could return as a queen. Yes! Hell yes, I'm up for anything.
Speaking of returns, one of our favorites, the return of Swamp Thing. We talked a little bit about this. David DeNicolo from Glamour Magazine calls it a cross between Little Shop of Horrors and The Incredible Hulk with a light spritz of hairspray.
Oh no, that's brilliant.
Fair enough.
That's brilliant. That is brilliant. Yes, indeed. Yeah, there was a lot of hairspray. It was the 80s, wasn't it? A lot of shoulder packs. Big earrings. And the one thing that really stands out for me is I remember thinking, God, I'm getting quite old. And that was back then, so imagine how I feel now, was the dear old Louis Jourdan.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
Hadn't seen the first one, though, right? Because he's in the first one. You had not seen the first movie.
I hadn't seen it.
Okay.
I hadn't seen it. He called, the parrot was called Gigi.
Yes.
And I just thought this was wonderful. And most of the kids on the set didn't understand what the significance was. But he did, every time he called his parrot, every time he called Gigi, you know, he had that little wicked smile. He was great. He was an absolute delight. Yeah. And what fun that was. All that hubble bubble stuff. You see, I was just recently offered about a month ago. I got a script I got excited for a minute and a half, and then I read it. And without trying to knock it too much, just in case the producers are listening. But, you know, it was a really not a very good horror and not very good anything. And I thought, you know what? I can't be doing this anymore. I can't be doing it. I need fun. I mean, if you're going to do a horror, you want something like Return of the Swamp Thing that's got humor and fantasy. And yes, it is horrible in lots of places, but wonderful monsters. I mean, that Swamp Thing, poor devil, you know, in that great big, what was he, a green, what was he, not the Green Cross Code Man, he was a plant, wasn't he?
He was a plant, yeah, well, you know, and that's what Heather Locklear even mentions in the film, too. Well, we're talking about the late, great Dick DeRock, he was in the series, and even from, well, you hadn't seen the first film, the costume left a lot to be desired. The second film, I thought they nailed the look of Swamp Thing.
I think it was fabulous. There's one picture that was taken of him with me. That sounds like bad English. Him with me. Well, you know what I mean. It probably is bad English. It's a wonderful picture, and he's got his arms around me, and I've sort of studied it at length because it really is. You know, I didn't have a lot to do with Swamp Thing. I was too busy in collapsing in the chemistry lab, wasn't I? In the laboratory there. But he just
switching those vials, as Louis Jordan says.
Yes, he was
switched the vials.
And what was it? It was so that he said, "Oh, stay vital." That's one of the lines that people shout at me. You know, people that recognise me from Can You Believe Swamp Thing. That's what they say: "Stay vital for me, darling." And I think, why do they say these things? I'm often caught out. What the hell are they talking about? I've got another story, but perhaps I won't tell you that story either. Okay, carry on. I'm getting overexcited here.
No, just working with Dick DeRock. I mean, I know he was the stuntman and actor. What was he like? I know you didn't share a lot of scenes with him, but
he was a delight. Yeah. From what I recall, I mean, he kept himself. Well, I say he kept himself to himself. Poor devil. I mean, Heather Locklear and I were often shrieking all over the place. You know, I mean, perhaps it was us that weren't around as much as, you know, it's difficult to get to know people if you're not in the same scenes as them, because you are, by nature, my days off, everybody else is working. You know, that's often what happens to me. So you don't have the pleasure of getting to know somebody. So I didn't really get to know him, but I remember him being very, very laid back and very nice and did a terrific job. He really did.
Yeah. I mean, the look of it, like you said, the film has its issues, but my goodness, the look of it. And you guys are selling your hearts out in it. You guys are 110% on it. So I love that about it.
That's what we do.
Speaking about 110%, Superman the movie, Superman 2, this is it. This is the gold standard for me. Many of my listeners, this is it. This is the one that got me locked and loaded, made me believe a man could fly. Were you a Superman fan?
Oh, dear.
You're not going to break my heart. No, we've heard it before.
No, I'm not going to. I'll tell you, I'll be absolutely honest, because everybody in England...
You're a stunning woman, girl, you know, in the 70s. That you didn't read comic books. That's not... We're okay with that.
We didn't get Superman in England. So when I heard about this, and when we were talking about Superman, of course I knew who Superman was, everybody knew. But we didn't have the series. And if we did, I don't know where the hell it was, because I never saw it. So it wasn't like, you know, when I was a kid, it was Bonanza and it was cowboy things. And I did see quite a bit of Batman, but I knew nothing about Superman per se. And I think it's fair to say that I was the very first time I hit America after Superman, and I saw the extraordinary outpouring of love that this character, I mean, people are just, and to this day, 40-year-old, 50-year-old gentlemen will turn up in their Superman suits. And I look at them and I think, goodness, you really did love that character. And why are you wearing a, you know? But there is.
I'll do the T-shirt. Is that okay with you?
The T-shirt.
I don't do the full suit.
The full suit is always a little bit of a surprise to me, because I want to say, have you looked at yourself, sir? But you see, I haven't got that.
I know.
Because but the point of it is, in England, and don't forget, you know, I was cast in England, we shot it in England. I didn't really know, of course I knew who Superman was, but no, I didn't know about Superman. Okay. And I didn't fall in love with Superman until the first day that I went, the first screening, and we believed that a man could fly, because we knew how we did it. But the first time he flew on that screen, and we were all at the, you know, the cast and crew screening, and you just thought, whoa. In the same way as that very opening shot on Star Wars at the crew and the cast screening that I saw in Tottenham Court Road in London at a theatre with my ex-husband, who was also in Star Wars, and we didn't know what we were going to see, and there was no opening, no premiere, and that spaceship, whatever it is, that mothership,
Star Destroyer,
flew over our heads, and we all ducked. You know that?
Yeah, good example.
terribly exciting.
Yeah. Oh, that was Harrison Ford. He said at the time, too, that scene, that's the one that sold it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So as far as Superman went, it really was. You know, you've got to remember that, firstly, Superman doesn't sweat, but you probably know that. And we had 3, 4, 5 days of problems at the very first days of shooting, because Superman would lift his arms up and he would have a little bit of perspiration mark. And how on earth were they going to deal with that? And it kind of took away from the whole sort of spirit of Superman for me in the first couple of days, because, you know, we're worrying about perspiration things. But then, you know, once we got into it, of course, and you know, Christopher Reeve, how could you fault him? I mean, he was extraordinary and remains my favorite. You know, his transformation, that wonderful thing that he do from Clark and pushing up his glasses, and it was just fabulous.
He became the character.
He absolutely did. And, you know, it's marvelous for me, you know, all these years later to still have the fans out there and still get the letters. And, you know, that's a shame when going back to Star Wars, because Star Wars was at the same sort of period. It's such a shame that we haven't been able to revisit it in the same ways. Mm. All of us that were in that initial Superman, because there are so many fans out there that would love to see somehow us. I mean, not that we could be brought back, and not that they would, but you know what I mean.
The magic.
I was envious, yes. Yeah. I want to be part of that magic again, just like the Star Wars guys were all able to be part of it. But hey, you never know.
I think a lot of that goes to Richard Donner, the verisimilitude he talks about. Let's talk a little bit about Richard Donner. Casting process. Richard Donner, how dare you? 8 appointments for Sarah Douglas? Cancelled?
Yeah. Yeah.
Kept you waiting 20 minutes on that
phone? Oh, the audacity of the man.
What's up with this? How did you – that got you the role, didn't it?
Well, it certainly got me seriously through the door. In fairness, I was shooting at Pinewood, and I was shooting The People That Time Forgot, another great classic.
Yes.
People That Time Forgot, and it was the only film that was being shot in England at that time. It was a very bad time for the industry. So I was incredibly full of my own self-importance, because there were two of us, two girls, and we were working. We were on this movie. And whilst I was in the Canary Islands on location, the word came through that I had this audition, which I knew nothing about at all. Came back to England, very busy at Pinewood, and people keep saying to me, why is there no screen test? Why didn't we see a screen test? Well, the truth of it is, I never did a screen test. I wasn't available. I was filming all day, every day, and the producers of Superman, the Sulkins, who were over in the other studio at Shepperton, I guess they weren't prepared to spend the money to have a crew on in the evening to accommodate Miss Douglas, who was only available after about 7 o'clock in the evening or 7:30. So firstly, I didn't do a screen test. What I did have were, as you mentioned, these 8 appointments, which were had to be always scheduled in the evening because of my work schedule. And it's a little bit of a drive from one studio to the next. You know, it's not that simple. And it was on the 8th occasion that the casting lady, the great late Mary Selway, called me, and she said, you know what, Sarah, this role is made for you. It's absolutely up your street. You must go, and, you know, you must go. And I was saying to her, well, who do they think they are? They've come over here from America, and da-da-da-da. I mean, I was really, God, when I think about it, prissy me. But anyway,
do you remember what you said, like, when you walked in?
I remember, and I remember very clearly, it was a small office, and I remember that I waited outside, having finally got to Shepperton. I then waited outside for certainly 20 minutes, if not 40 minutes, and I was tired and cranky because it's already been a very, very long day for
me. It's late, yeah.
And I do like my bed, and I was already counting the hours until I got to get up again to go back to film again. You know, it's that feeling.
Right.
And I remember going into this room and seeing this man, and I remember his blue tinted glasses and slightly too long hair, and just thinking, who does he think he is? This Californian sort of look, which was, we are talking end of 70s. And I think that I definitely think I expressed the fact that I did think it was a bit much that it kept me waiting. I know that my attitude, and I do this terribly well because I have lots of people that will tell you when I'm in a bit of a sort of tricky mood. I give off a don't mess with me vibe quite easily.
No.
And exactly, can you believe it? And it appears that I gave that feeling that evening. Now, I'm not sure if it was that evening, and I think it might have been. That was my very first, that they asked me to just do a little scene in that small room, basically sort of high kick and you know, not exactly doing a karate chop, but whether I was doing a little scene or whether
something
they just asked
physical.
Me. But I remember, yes, I can remember physically. I wouldn't say that Donna ended up on top of the filing cabinet, but I can remember, I have very long legs, that I caused quite an impression that very, very first meeting. With a certain amount of aplomb, I had it. I think the producers were in there as well. I can't quite remember. All I remember are those blue tint. I'd never seen blue tinted glasses, and it was nighttime, and I just thought, oh, for goodness sake.
Love it.
But that was his first meeting with me, and obviously it went on then, and there were other meetings and, you know, other things that I had to do.
But that was it, yeah. Verisimilitude and serendipity.
There you go. So, go on.
You mentioned the great Brando.
Yes.
Look, you loved him. I loved him. We all loved him. He is famous for putting little bits of dialogue all over the place. He does not like to memorize. He did not like to memorize his dialogue. Where did he put his cue cards during the scenes he had with you?
Well, again, this is one of these stories that I'm now beginning to wonder if I've made this up.
That's okay.
I don't think I have. No, because I've said over the years that he stuck it to my forehead. That could be a slight Sarah Douglas embellishment. I'm beginning to feel that perhaps it is, because nobody else seems to remember that. But he certainly had the words in front of my face. There's no question about that.
He's not looking at your eyes.
No.
He's talking about Ursa and the hatred of man and all this, and he's looking at the words.
Exactly. He's looking at the words, which he also did have. He had a lady that traveled with him that did his cue cards, so that he had these enormous cards with the words written on that were quite a distance away, back at the back of the set. And so there was an occasion, because I just adored him, there was an occasion where I was talking to him in that very sort of breathy, keen sort of, I'm a young actress sort of voice, asking him about his, you know, the intensity and that look he has in his eyes and that place he goes to. And he quickly corrected me and said that indeed he didn't really go to any place. He had forgotten his eyeglasses, or he couldn't wear his eyeglasses. And so he screws up his eyes to read the cue cards. So all of that, and the screwing up of the eyes is actually because he's blind as a bat. Can you believe it? So that was the first thing. And then he told me himself, he said, if you want to see some good words written on somewhere, he said, Missouri Breaks. There's a scene, I believe, with Jack Nicholson on a fence that you can actually see some of the words written, which I haven't actually revisited to look at. But and then he also told me in great confidence that I've spread the word everywhere now, that he, in a very well-known film, don't worry about this, I'm not going to ruin anything for anybody, but in Last Tango in Paris, he has a rather passionate love scene with a young lady, with Marie Schneider, I believe her name was. And he, as he kissed her on her beautiful, lithe body, down one side of the body, he had the words written there. So as he kissed her gently, he was reading the words off the other side of her body that he'd written. So, you know.
Brando, he could get away with it.
Do you know what? That was what was so extraordinary. And I really did study him. And he was there, I think, for 12 days. I mean, I was so impressed. I mean, firstly, it was my first experience of what producers will do to appease and please their stars. We were at Shepperton Studios that were before we moved to Pinewood, and we were shooting there with him. And it was a pretty rundown studio, but they carpeted and they painted the one corridor that he walked down to work, you know, when he went from his room to the set. So, I mean, he lived in this sort of world that everything was glorious. The rest of us were sort of, you know, out the back in sort of crappy old rooms and dust and you know, spiders and cobwebs and the like. But he had this palatial sort of wonderful place to work. He also did something which I recall and to this day, I remember him. You know, we all have our chairs with our names on the back, and that's sort of part of the fabulousness of being on a movie set and finally getting a good job, because you get a chair with your name on, and there was mine and there was Brando's and everybody else. And one of the things that happens is that whilst you're on set, somebody might well sit in your chair, which is quite acceptable, but the minute they see you walking off the set towards your chair, they will jump up and vacate the chair for you. And I remember somebody sitting in Brando's chair, and Brando was on the set. And I saw Brando coming off the set, and the guy next to me in Brando's chair hadn't seen it. Brando saw him sitting in that chair, and I saw him stop and turn aside and walk over to the corner and flip an old fire bucket over and sit quite happily in the corner on a fire bucket chatting to somebody. Wow. But, you know, he didn't. He said to me, I just wish people could just treat me like a regular guy, because around Gene Hackman, who we all adored, Hackman was fabulous. He was to me a major star. I mean, I was, you know, I was the French Connection era and everything else. I was thrilled to be working with him, but he was approachable. Brando had a serious aura about him. I mean, he was a superstar, and he spoke to me about it. And he sat me down one day on his lap, and I can remember the concern I had. Did I sit on top of his rather well-formed stomach, which was quite large at that point? Do I sit on top of it and be very close to his face, or do I sit below it on his knee? It was a worry, and I was stiff as a board. And he said, come on, he said, I'm sure you've sat on many boys in men's laps. And I can remember thinking, yes, I was rigid with fear. He was fabulous. In fact, I've just found the photograph he autographed for me just the other day, and I just thought, I need to take more care of this, because it's a wonderful. He was an absolute pleasure, and wicked and naughty and just making us all laugh, and just, oh, wonderful man. And what a talent, you know, what a talent, yeah. Right until the very end, even when the words were being fed into his ear. How do you do that? How do you have words fed into your ear? I can't even work a sat nav, you know, I can't do that. Let alone having the words in my ear.
And he got the movie sold. I mean, that was the thing. It was off Hackman and Brando that they got funding.
Absolutely.
Too. So. Most memorable, family-friendly Gene Hackman story you've got?
Well, really and truly, I just think, I mean, there's a lovely photograph that I recently put on something, I suppose Twitter or something, of him and I in the Oval Office. And I've just got a little bit of a smile on my face, because if you look carefully, you see that he's just gently squeezing my hand, and we've both got our hands on the fireplace, and he was so wonderfully warm and friendly, and I remember what sticks in the mind of my family is he sent my lovely mum a great big hamper full of foods and wines and things, you know. I went to see Chorus Line with him, and that was so exciting. The opening night of Chorus Line in the West End, I went with him and I think my fiance at the time. I mean, there was a small group of us, but he, you know, I went as his guest, and he was just a delight. He was very charming and a real presence and somebody. You know, I know that there are people nowadays, don't ask me who they are, because I can't imagine who they are, but to be working as a young actress as I was, and I think I was about 27, with the likes of Brando and Gene was just phenomenal. You know, and we also had lots of other actors coming in. I remember Trevor Howard coming and not speaking, standing in the background, you know, and I thought, God, he was on Mutiny on the Bounty with Brando. And then finally, you know, Brando spotted him and went over and spoke to him. You know, these people were coming and doing a day's work, you know, and not wanting to come into the aura, into the space. But Brando was saying, come on down. And, oh, I can't think of anything particularly. And they're all family friendly, because that's how he was.
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple of stories I could tell you, but those aren't family friendly. He was a delight. He's quite wicked and had quite a twinkle in his eye, and that's all I'm saying on the subject of anything.
That seems like it would be an amazing time.
You know what? I could tell you a story, which is a family-friendly story. When we finally moved from Shepperton Studios, where we were shooting Superman 1 and 2, as you know, mm-hmm. we then moved over to Pinewood Studios. The corridors of Pinewood, my picture finally made it to the corridor, which, you know, it was from the people at Time Forgot. And there was a picture of me with my hair I had that sort of hairstyle that Carrie Fisher had, but she had it after me. I had my hair in sort of funny little buns, and I look very conservative and nice. But there's a nice picture. There was a nice picture up in the corridors, and it's for a young actress, you know, it was. For me, it was quite an accolade that I was up there. So I was walking along the corridor, and of course, this was in the early days with Hackman, and walking along, and I saw the picture, and I said, oh, look, she's pretty. And he looked at me, and I was in full Ursa gear, of course. And he looked at me and said, oh, do you think so? And I thought, oh, God, shut up. He hadn't realised it was me. And he wasn't really being rude, but it certainly took the wind out of my sails. I can tell you. So there we are.
There's a lesson in Hollywood right there. Hey, my wife was curious about one of the scenes in Superman 2. I'm talking about some of these. There's a scene with a snake. Mm-hmm. You're kind of like coming into your powers. You guys are figuring these things out. I know there's a cutaway where the snake strikes. Real snake you're picking up?
Oh, absolutely real snake.
Looks like it's moving pretty well, so.
Yeah, I've only worked with real snakes, and luckily that's one of those things. I often think, what if I couldn't deal with them? Now, I've had a few splendid snakes in different jobs. That one, and they put something on my wrist. I don't think that was my wrist that it cut away to, but I know that it did a sort of a lurch for my wrist.
You did take a strike though on the long scene, yeah. The long shot that was cut. Yeah. Okay.
No, I did. No, absolutely. Oh no. I'm game. Or I was back then. I don't know about now, but I was then.
Injuries? You guys are doing a lot of flying. Jack talked about some of the injuries that were going on the set with the flying harnesses and things. Injuries, battle scene, Metropolis, those type of things?
Yeah. I by the end of it, I had I think at the last count it was 9 separate injuries to my back because stuff happened and then we didn't really get time to let things heal. They just went on. We went on working. I at the very end had a physiotherapist on the set and I think I'm right saying I could only do 20 minutes on the wires and then I had to have 20 minutes off or half an hour off. I mean, we are talking a long time ago, but I was compensated by the producer, so I thank them for that. But I had it screwed my back up pretty much. The main thing, now looking back, of course, Christopher worked out. Christopher got himself in shape. Of course he did. I just turned up on the set and they said, stand on that windowsill and jump off, you know, and fly. England was very lacking in places like gyms or anything like that. We weren't into any kind of a health kick back then. So I did nothing. You know, I was just luckily pretty fit, but it wasn't because I worked out or got myself fit. I mean, goodness knows, if it was today, I'm sure that it would have been a whole other thing. And indeed, Schwarzenegger got us all working out in the gym when we did Conan because he was mortified that we all sat around eating and drinking all the time. But on Superman, I did suffer terrifically and little things that you know, there's a scene where you see Lex Luthor is on my back. He's on my back, right. And he turns his face away from camera, and that of course is because it's not Gene Hackman; it's the stand-in doing it. And he's on my back, and there was a small there's a small mold that sits. I'm lying in a mold on a pole arm, and then there's a small little mold that it goes just above my lower back where the actor lies. So that he looks as if he's lying flat on top of me, but of course there's something to support him. But that particular contraption with his weight started to bend in. And because it's a sort of a computerized sequence, once the pole arm starts dipping and diving, you can't really stop it. And so the minute that it started to press into my lower spine, I was complaining and was pressing down on me. They couldn't stop it until the end. And by then, you know, there's an injury there. I can't remember which one that was, but that was one of them from the pressure of the weight of his back on top of me. I certainly tore all my shoulder, all the muscles around my shoulder, which to this day is still very bad from throwing the bus across the street. We had waited until it was about 4 a.m. It was freezing cold on the back lot at Pinewood. They had built Metropolis, unfortunately, on an underground lake which had frozen over. So the ground was freezing.
You're like on a hockey rink.
Yeah, just like that. And I was wearing very little, as you can see. And one of the, I know this is family friendly, but one of the great things about my outfit is you couldn't put anything underneath it to keep me warm because you could see through. I'd got slits up the side of my bottoms and the arms were slit. And the only thing I wore underneath there was a bra, which luckily they were able to put mink inside. So I had a fur lined bra. So I had the hottest pair in the business, but the rest was freezing. I mean, really cold. Sorry about that.
The best designs from Krypton, right?
Yes, really. I mean, really cold. Anyway, I went on the set and, as I said, we'd been waiting for hours and with the bus, when I lifted it, of course, the bus is on a crane. It's a chain that's on a crane. So as I'm lifting it, obviously I'm lifting it up and the crane is lifting it. But my arms are, and Jack's the other end, my arms are completely stiff, you know, holding it up, full arm. But of course, as I did, the chain moved fractionally. And instead of relaxing my arms, I went on holding it. And I can't remember who the hell, which director it was, but he said to me afterwards, he said, well, why didn't you relax your arms? And I said, because for that split second, I had superpowers. But what, of course, happened was because I didn't relax my arms, it ripped the muscles in my back because of the, obviously, it's not the full weight of the bus, but you've only got to have a fraction of the weight of it. And it really screwed my back up. And then we went straight on with the next sequence because it's nighttime and don't make a fuss, Sarah, and this and that. And, you know, back then, don't make a fuss, Sarah was.
No, and you're not a stunt woman.
No,
why didn't you do it? Because you're an actress. You're not a stunt woman.
No, but that was it. So, and I'll be interested to know which director it was. And I know that there's, I apologize to all the fans for not being quick on this. I can't quite remember.
It's we're going back quite a ways too on a lot of these things.
Some of it, and that was the point with Superman too, some of it was with Lester and some of it was with Donna. So, you know, you have to figure, I can usually sort it out by what my hair looked like because my wigs seem to change periodically.
Yeah, you and Margot Kidder, it's completely different. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's who was the continuity person on this? You know, you mentioned this earlier because, you know, obviously Margot Kidder, Jack O'Halloran, a lot of these folks had gotten close to Donner. He's axed. There's that. That's part of history. We know all about that.
Yes.
I kind of want to talk to you about the perspective that you had. You had a little bit different perspective, and I think even when Richard Lester came in,
yes,
that may have changed your performance. Did you do some acting changes or some performance enhancements with the character from director?
I know, not particularly, but what I have said is, firstly, because all the other actors had come over from America, they were on location. They were also on good per diem, which Sarah Douglas wasn't because she lived in London. So they all went home at nighttime together, if you know what I mean. They all hung out together. They did things. And they, to a certain degree, really got to know Dick Donner very, very well, as you would. You know, you're all on location. You're all over in London endlessly. So they all went to the theatre together. They did stuff together. It wasn't to say that they didn't include me. But the fact of it was, I went home to my husband. You know, I went home I wasn't married then. I got married during the opening of the film. But Richard and I lived together. So I went home, you know, I went home. Amen. That was the end of the story. So they got to know Dick a lot better. And also they were all, you know, from California. Well, they weren't. They lived in California. Everybody knew each other. They had a sort of much more of an LA lifestyle. I was home countess, you know. I was used to shooting and hunting and fishing and living down in Stratford and a little bit of a hooray Henry. So hanging out with this guy with his hair that needed a bit of a trim and blue glasses wasn't really top of my list of priorities. That's not to say I wasn't married to an American who didn't have any hair, but that's a different story.
And he played your husband. He's not with us anymore, but he played the right. He played the reporter in Superman 2.
And what else did he play?
East Houston, Idaho. And he was in. Oh, you got me! Oh, you got me on my nerd.
He was Admiral Motti in the original.
Admiral Motti. Well, there you go. I lost. You got a couple of nerd points. I lost a few.
Because I can tell you now, the kids used to come and knock on the door. They came and knocked on the door and they had no interest whatsoever in me because, of course, I didn't, you know, I didn't look at all like Ursa, surprisingly enough. All they wanted was for Rick to do a bit of death, a bit of strangulation acting in the doorway, which he did at the drop of a hat.
Oh, he was great. Oh, he was great.
But anyway, so as far as Dick Donner goes, you know, I didn't kind of get to know him in that way. They were very, very close to him. They all had met him over in L.A. Okay. They'd all bonded. They'd come to England. I didn't. And when they brought – I didn't know anything about anything. All I knew was we stopped shooting. I then was recontracted to come back the following summer, a few months later, and I had what was called a pay or play contract, which I now look back at and think, oh yes, because it's exactly that. If you don't work, you still get paid. And they weren't ready for me to come back. And I guess during this whole period was the period that they were going through it with Donna and replacing him, and all of that was going on. So by the time I got back to reshooting Superman 2, renegotiating the contract, it was with Richard Lester. I didn't know anything about anything. I knew who Lester was because I was a Beatles fan, and of course I'd seen Hard Day's Night, and of course I knew who he was. The interesting thing was, you asked about performance-wise. He, and I've said this quite often, he was quite a serious man, whereas Dick was wonderfully laid back and wonderfully humorous and funny. Richard Lester is quite different. I mean, it couldn't be further from Donna, really, in my mind. Quite serious and no messing around. Dick would say to us, you know, well, look, this is what I want, and if you can do it, that's great, but hey, you know, we've got all the time in the world. You know, he really worked with the actors and let them find ways of doing it. Lester was absolutely clear that he would have two or three cameras. He knew exactly what he wanted. So the day that I came onto the set, and he said, okay, and we'd waited and waited and waited and waited. And again, it was on that back lot. And it was, so perhaps that was the same. Perhaps he was the director that said about the bus, because it was the day that I did the scene with the manhole cover. Mm-hmm. And when I finally got onto the set, having waited all day, and I mean all day, you know, it's a long day, and they finally call you and it's 3 a.m. And he said, okay, I want you to walk up to this piece of wood. I want you to stamp on the end. It's going to flip up the manhole cover. You catch the manhole cover, you throw it and you hit Superman. And I can remember thinking, ooh, okay. But he had such a way about him. No nonsense. This is what you're going to do. And blow me down. I did it. First take, I did it. I am pretty certain that if it had been Richard Donner and Donner had said to me, you know what, Sarah, this is going to be difficult. You might have to do it a few times. But hey, we know we've got all the time. I think that for me, it worked very well. No nonsense, Lester. Because I didn't question anything. You know, I just went ahead and did it because he said, this is what you're doing, and I did it. And I was a little bit intimidated by him. You know,
was the character of Ursa a little different from the first time you shot with Donner than when you shot with Lester?
Well, no, because tonally, maybe.
I've kind of read some things where maybe she was a little bit more robotic under Donner's direction, but maybe a little bit more trying to work people.
Yeah, I don't remember any notes about anything.
Okay.
The only thing would be that we had a year in the middle of it. You know, and you're coming back to something. We're picking up sequences. We're going on to the Fortress of Solitude and lovely Jeffrey Unsworth, the lighting camera, is no longer with us, so we have to reshoot this and try and match this. And it was all about trying to match shots. So I don't really remember particularly.
I'm just curious, like if an actress gets a mulligan or a do-over, if that changes anything.
No, because you're not really getting a do-over. We were matching a lot of the stuff that was already shot. So, you know, there were sequences. We were just finishing the film and there was stuff we reshot. And it was really, it was more to do with just coming back to something and trying to get back into that space that you were in before and completing the movie. Okay. You know, so it was a brilliant, brilliant for me as an actress to shoot something twice in a complete with two completely different directors was a brilliant experience, you know, and I certainly at the time was well aware that it was a unique experience. But again, you know, nobody was talking about it. It was all top secret. I didn't know it was top secret, but it was all top secret, yeah. You know.
No, fair enough. An interesting perspective, too. Keep anything from the set? Costume?
Oh, God, I wish. And I believe me, I don't know, nothing. Because you know what? Back then we didn't. Once it was over, I was like, thank goodness. So when I see boots appear on eBay and my wig appeared not so long ago, which was my stunt double, and I just think, goodness me, somebody had the foresight back then to grab things. No, I have a horrible feeling that I had two binders that were Superman 1 and Superman 2 that they gave us to put our scripts in. I think those went out with the rummage. I mean, that went to the church sale. It's stuff comes and
painful.
Believe me, when I split up with my with Richard, I searched the attic because I was in. I came back and I searched it for any Star Wars memorabilia, and to this day, I'm sure I'm going to find a little nugget that's going to make me retire me. No,
it's the fanboy in myself and many of us that just they she's still got the boot somewhere, but okay.
No, I've not still got the boot somewhere. I didn't bother with anything because I wasn't bothered. I just wasn't bothered. That's the truth of it. Now we all know. Now everybody grabs everything there is. So it's a
I know time has escaped us and I apologize, but it wasn't Superman 2 wasn't the last time you terrorized the Man of Steel. We love your episode of Superman, the animated series.
Yes.
You've segued into tons of voice work now.
Yes.
Just talk a little bit about some of the things that you enjoy about voiceover work. We've got Iron Man, Batman Beyond, Green Lantern, your Scar in Green Lantern.
I have to say, I was very disappointed that wasn't picked up because my character was going places and I knew where it was going. And I was really excited. I thought, great, finally.
What happened there? It seemed like the series was just so cut short.
Because, supposedly, and this makes sense, the film of Green Lantern just didn't do too well. Consequently, the merchandising didn't sell. Consequently, what goes hand in hand with merchandising, of course, is the animated series. And so, you know, they just dumped it. And I was ready for it. I was having so much fun doing it. I love it. And they talked to me, you know, I was going to come back and have a really good period of time doing it. Anyway, there you go. That's what happens.
What was it like coming back to the world of Superman as Mala?
Well, I liked it. Blonde and tiny waist. That suits me fine. Thank you very much.
Beat up Superman again.
Yeah, I loved it. And I love all of that standing in a studio making sort of strange sounds and punching oneself and making the sort of exasperated sounds that one has to make. It was great. You know, I mean, the truth of it is, it's lovely not having to learn lines. Not to say that I'm not totally committed to learning lines, but my goodness me, as one gets older, and it gets increasingly more of a struggle. And I think it's more to do with the fact that one panics and you think, oh gosh, I hope I can remember everything. It's great having a script in front of you.
A whole new appreciation for Brando?
A whole new appreciation for Brando. I really do. As far as animated goes, I love sitting in a room or standing room with a bunch of actors doing it. It is so much fun. You know, it's great. And it's a whole new dimension because you have to find, I'm not seeing anything on the screen often or not. Sometimes you see a bit, but you're having to find ways of delivering these lines. And it's particularly like in Batman and different things where you're having to have a fight and it's fabulous. It's like a new dimension on acting. I love what I do. But I've done it. Evil Wicked Queen with different hats on. I do it terribly well. It comes terribly naturally. And so, you know, I am thrilled to still be doing Evil Wicked Queen. I did say to them on Green Lantern, isn't this a bit obvious? Because you come in and they say, nobody will guess you're going to be bad in the end. And I'm like, oh, hello. You know, you've only got to ask a fan. They go, well, we know it's always, if it's you, you're going to be bad. And I said, no, maybe it's not. But I did, you know, it's a different dimension and it's great work to do. And plus it's fast and it's satisfying and it's fun. And I've enjoyed it. I am back in England at the moment because circumstances have me rather here, not back in LA. So I've got to just, you know, I've slipped a little bit. I've lost some of my work that I was doing back home in LA. But, you know, we don't know what's going to happen or when. I'll be back in February. I'll have a poke around and see if there's anything fabulous going on.
Well, I was curious because I don't know if you're familiar with the new Supergirl TV show.
Tell me about it.
Okay, they've dropped Non. We've heard Non referenced. I don't know if we're going to hear Ursa referenced. I don't know. But is there any chance we're going to see you on the Supergirl TV series?
Can you honestly explain to me why not? Let me just say, this is my little pet peeve. Smallville, on the very first episode of Smallville, the very first episode, my optician in LA, his one of his clients was the wife of the producer. And he said, I'm going to tell it. I've just seen it. This is perfect. So I said, you get onto it. I went home. I phoned my agent. We did everything. And slowly but surely, everybody else appears in Smallville. But no Sarah Douglas, much to my deep chagrin and embarrassment, because everybody said, oh, who did you tick off? And I said, no, I don't believe I have done anything wrong.
Terrence Stamp was all over it.
Thank you. It's enough to drive a girl crazy.
Maybe
it's
a call to Terry.
It's enough to bring the Ursa out in it, believe me. Now, then I am subjected to this barrage from Jack O'Halloran about nons and small and super, you know, and Supergirl. Nice. I have contacted my agent. I did very quickly. I'm making all the right noises. And okay. I am going to try, but I think people need to just make a fuss. And there was lots of people on Twitter were saying this. I would love to. I mean, there must be something I can do, for goodness sake.
Well, Berlanti is crazy good about bringing people back. I mean, there's so many nods in The Flash and Supergirl and Arrow and all these things. So,
well, there you go then. So you know, in my, it would be for me. I would just love it because I owe it to my fans, and I have the wonderful, wonderful fan base of people that, you know, we go back way back because it's the Superman fans and my sci-fi fans and my fantasy fans, and goodness knows they've all of them been waiting. They keep saying, when are you going to appear? And I just think just a little something to appease us all, for goodness sake. Yeah. So, hey, okay.
I've got a good feeling about it. If we can get Greg Berlanti on the show, that will be a definite question that I'm going to ask him is, when is Sarah Douglas going to be appearing on my TV screen?
Thank you. Please do. And I would love to. It's just because it's just ties everything up beautifully, and I would love it, yeah. and the fans would love it, and it would just be so much fun. So
it makes so much sense. We'll get that movement going. Where can we see you? What are you working on right now?
Well, the next thing that will be seen is this film Displacement, which is shot by Ken Mader. And again, I dread to tell you, it's a sci-fi.
Shocking.
And what is even more exciting, it's about, there's a lot of stuff about time travel or something, and quantum physics and stuff.
Yeah.
This really caught me out, because quantum physics is not one of my stronger points. And boy, I'm going to be back in February.
But we love you in this world. We love you in the sci-fi genre. Too. Are you good or bad? Can you tell us or can't tell us? If you can't tell us, that's fine.
I don't think I should tell you.
That's fine. We'll be surprised.
But you will be surprised. How's that?
We will be surprised, but we will not be surprised that Sarah Douglas is going to be awesome in it. So.
Well, Sarah Douglas would like to be doing more work, and Sarah Douglas could do with more work. But Sarah Douglas is being a good daughter at the moment and spending a little bit of time over in England with a 94-year-old mother who needs a little bit of care and a little bit of TLC.
Taking care of the important things in life.
That's what I'm doing. But I will be back stateside shortly, and hopefully we'll get cracking again very soon, and stuff will come. As I said, unfortunately, what has come my way recently has really not been overly exciting, and consequently, I don't really want to do horror films. It's not my kind of thing. I love a bit of sci-fi because the fans go crazy, and they're very understanding, because of course they ask me questions. Oh my Lord, what was it, Stargate? I still haven't figured out what on earth I was doing. And when I get the questions, I look, you know, I get this look of complete panic in my eyes, like I'm being sort of a rabbit in the headlights here.
Can I give you a hint there?
Yeah.
Just always ask, what do you think it means?
Well, now there you go. Thank you for that tip. If only I had known that. Yes, I am quite deft at turning it around, but I think the secret is out that I have no idea most of the time. So we
love you and everything we see. The website, sarah-douglas.com.
That's right. And you know what? Many moons ago, I was asked if I wanted to buy my name. And I said, why would I want to buy my name? Well, now you know why, because now I've had to buy it with a hyphen in it.
Because you get a big old hyphen in it. So we will look for that. Facebook, it's Sarah Douglas Official.
That's right.
Instagram, The Sarah Douglas. And Twitter, at The Sarah Douglas.
And I've really enjoyed, you know, Twitter, I've gone into that I wasn't overly whelmed at the idea of Twitter being of an age group, but I've slowly got with the program and I've enjoyed it. And what I've loved doing is being able to, recently we had Superman on television, Superman 2, and I was able to tweet with people that were watching it, and the fans were going crazy and we had a blast doing it. And in fact, I got a thing this afternoon to say Superman 1 was on. I said, yeah, I just got squashed in a sheet of glass. We can leave that. But can I just say, Joe, that is one special effect. To this day, Superman fans aside, the regular folk that say, what were you in? Have I ever seen you in anything? I say Superman and they say, were you the one that was squashed in glass? Now, how brilliant is that? From back in the 70s, people that aren't big fans, but everybody's seen Superman somewhere, you know, whether you're on a plane or whether you're in the back ends of wherever, somewhere along the line, you've seen Superman. And to remember that special effect where we got shot off into space in a sheet of glass, how brilliant, to this day, flattened.
And it's actually been incorporated in other Superman mythos and other Superman projects.
Yes, absolutely.
It's an iconic image. Yeah, when you guys are screaming, forgive me. Yeah. Oh, that line still haunts me to this day. I see it just, look, you gave me the creeps so many years ago and I loved every second of it.
You need to get a life, love.
This is it. I'm already locked and loaded. It doesn't get any better.
Go and spend some time with that lovely wife of yours.
We do. We watch Superman. We watch Star Wars. Oh, we do all kinds. And we watch musicals. We watch Mary Poppins and things.
Now you have endeared yourself to me.
Yes, so we are well-rounded. And we see them in the theaters, too. We go see our musicals in the theater.
Well, I was delighted because I got a text from who did I get a text from yesterday? From it's coming to me. Karen Detrice, an email, and I was just looking at her on the television. There's a little tiny little eeny beanie girl in Mary Poppins.
Oh, there you go.
Thought, oh, and there she is now, all grown up and.
It's life. Well, yeah, life moves on.
The only thing that doesn't move on for me, and to this day, I think I can sit at these and I go and do these signings and I thoroughly enjoy myself, and especially when I'm with Jack because we have a good old laugh. Oh, my Lord.
Oh, yeah.
And we all get together periodically and it's great fun. But the guys come up and they always tell me how much they loved me when they were a kid. And they say, oh, I remember when I was just a wee kid. Or I was just going into my teens and I love you and now I'm all grown up, you're still all right. And I think, yeah, thank you very much indeed. You've just reminded me of how many years have passed. You know, I really don't want to be reminded. It's a long time. but hey,
it's one of the greatest characters and you are cemented in our memory and that in our memory banks, and you're just a part of the Superman mythology. It's, you know, there's different caretakers and you are one of the caretakers for a time being.
That is brilliant, and thank you for saying so. You've made my evening.
No worries. Sarah, I'm so glad we had a chance to chat. We've talked about some of the most evil villains you've played, but that's a credit to your acting skills. You are as charming as can be in real life. You've been great. Continued success, and
thank you, Joe.
Thank you for joining me on the show today.
Thank you, and you just keep in contact with me. Let me know when they want me for Supergirl, okay?
# Sarah Douglas Supergirl.
Hey! I'm going to do it right now, Joe. I'm going to do it right now if I can figure out how to do it.
We'll make it happen. Love talking to you. Thank you so much.
And a happy 2016. And all I can say to you is, hey, Superman.
Oh, how much fun is Sarah Douglas? That was quite entertaining. I really enjoyed hanging out with her today. Look, be honest, how amazing would it be if she shows up in one of these current superhero television shows? That really seems like a no-brainer to me, to put her into this world. Not only would she be brilliant, as we discussed in the Supergirl TV series, they name-dropped Nan already. Think about it. There is a proposed Krypton TV series. David Goyer, he's the writer you might know on the recent Batman film trilogy, for Christopher Nolan, Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, the Justice League movies that are coming up. Last thing I heard, he was developing a Man of Steel prequel television series titled Krypton. So if that happens, can't think of a better acting fit than Sarah Douglas and Superman's home planet. I mean, she's been in that world quite a few times, so just saying, that might be pretty awesome. So, hey, why don't we have some fun with this? Let's see if we can make this happen. That's what social media is all about, right? Do this. Head over to Twitter, Hashtag it. Hashtag Sarah Douglas Supergirl. Hashtag Sarah Douglas Krypton. Get this all over social media. We want to see Sarah Douglas back in these worlds in some capacity. Let's try to make this happen. That would be pretty cool. My thanks to Sarah for flying in today. So much easier to get in the lair than it is the Fortress of Solitude, don't you think? If you want to get into the world of Sarah Douglas, be sure to check out the website. It's sarah-douglas.com. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, she's everywhere. All the links you need, you can find them at her website. You can also find them at my website, comicbookcentral.net. That's also where you can find each and every episode of Comic Book Central, including the Superman movie-themed episodes. Today we got Sarah Douglas. We've also had Sarah's Kryptonian buddy, Nan, Jack O'Halloran. He was here. Executive producer, Ilya Salkind. We talked to him about the movies and the Superboy TV series. That was pretty cool. Jimmy Olsen, Mark McClure, young Clark Kent, Jeff East. They've all been here. All those episodes, they're in the archive at my website. You can also subscribe at iTunes. That's the best way to get them. You get them all that way. And then you're certainly not going to miss out on anything that's coming up. If you're in iTunes, please leave a review. If you're there, thank you very much. Appreciate when you do that. Blueberry, Stitcher, you can check out the show there. While you're hashtag tweeting to try to get Sarah on those shows, follow Comic Book Central on Twitter, why don't you? At Comic Book CTRL. Facebook is facebook.com/Comic Book Central Network. Cool stuff being posted there all the time. We've got those pictures coming up from Marvel Universe Live. I'm going to get those on there. And be sure to let me know what you think of the show. Let me know what you think of the Superman-themed shows, Sarah Douglas's interview today. Drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net, or you can click that Signal Me tab right there on the website. That is what Bill Madia did regarding episode 103. That was my interview with the writer of Batman 66 Meets the Green Hornet and the co-host of Hollywood Babylon, Ralph Garman. Regarding that episode, Bill writes, Joe, with all the Star Wars The Force Awakens stuff going on, I got a little bit behind on your show. Just listen to this episode. Great stuff. I don't know how you do it, but your shows keep getting better. This one was very informative, not to mention extremely funny, even your imitation of Marty McFly. Looking forward to great stuff in 2016. Hey, thanks for the kind words, Bill. So glad you enjoyed it. That was a fun one. I had a blast doing that one, too. A lot of voices that Ralph did. That was pretty fun. And as you've just heard, talk about great things in 2016. Already got great stuff this year, starting with the incomparable Sarah Douglas. Hope you enjoyed that interview. More super goodness is on the way. Stay tuned. As I said, hashtag share the lair. Share it on Facebook. Retweet it on Twitter. Tell everyone you know. Tell them in the comic book store. So many amazing guests are coming up in the weeks ahead. Folks, let's make Comic Book Central even bigger here in year three. You have a part in that, and I truly appreciate it. All right, kids, that is it for today. Before General Zod starts poking around here for Ursa, I'd better hightail it out of here. But I am not going to be gone for long, because next week on Comic Book Central, the legendary talent behind the original Marvel Comics adaptation of Star Wars and the critically acclaimed series American Flag. He's also the man that helped bring the Mirror Master, Nightshade, and the Trickster to the world of the 1990 television series, The Flash. The one, the only, Howard Chaykin is going to be here next week. I hope you're going to be here as well. Until then, stay super. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content in this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations, 3.0 Unported License. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Yeah, I love that voice. It takes me right back to Superman, so that's
Does it really? Cool. Well, this is good. Well, let's just hold hands, hmm?